This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us. Karen Reed back in a courtroom again today for a new motions hearing. Let's take you there right now.
Specifically in terms of our requests, we've requested an unredacted copy of MSP report number 26. There are certain reports in this case, Your Honor, that deal with material witnesses that are so heavily redacted that we can't make sense of what is even in them. It deals with an interview conducted by two material witnesses in our case, Lieutenant Fanning and Trooper Kathleen Prince, and we're simply asking for an unredacted copy of that report. As to request three, we're asking for an unredacted copy of public record responses regarding email correspondence and communications associated with the Sandra Birchmore investigation. The communications we've received in our case have been revelatory, material, and exculpatory. Given the consistency and parallel type of investigation, the communications between and among law enforcement officers and the Norfolk County DA's office with witnesses who are material to our case are relevant and should be turned over in discovery. Finally, we've also asked for an unredacted copy of all reports, communications, and handwritten notes and other documents from the Sandra Birchmore investigation concerning material law enforcement witnesses in our case. Your Honor, the reports that by investigating officers that led to the improper clearing of Peace Officer Matthew Farwell in the Birchmore case go directly to the credibility of those law enforcement officers and their reports. The reports that they drafted in reaching certain conclusions clearing Officer Farwell directly go to their credibility in our case, which again deals with the clearing of a fellow officer. And I would cite one example, Your Honor. For example, Massachusetts State Police Trooper Guarino, the same person who obtained and analyzed the electronic devices in our case and reached certain opinions and conclusions, also analyzed electronic data in the Birchmore investigation. As it turns out, Trooper Guarino made certain ultimate conclusions in at least one of his reports, stating that really there's nothing to see here. I found some text messages. They corroborate that Matthew Farwell had a consensual relationship with Sandra Birchmore. No evidence of improper conduct. Nothing to see here. Yet, when the federal investigators looked at the electronic data, they recovered tens of thousands of text messages between Birchmore and Farwell that implicated Farwell in her murder. The text messages, which are publicly available and referenced in federal search warrants, affidavits, are incredibly disturbing. They establish that he had sex with her as a minor when she was a cadet in the Stoughton Explorers program. They detail violent fantasies. It's clearly implicates Matthew Farwell. It's not even a close call. Is it relevant and material to us that the same expert would analyze a fellow officer's electronic devices and make those types of conclusions? Of course it is. This information goes directly to Guarino's credibility, bias, competency, and ability to conduct an investigation in this case where there were law enforcement officers who should have been suspects. As to request number five, Your Honor, we're asking for documents related to the internal affairs investigation into Trooper Michael Proctor. As the court knows, we have an ongoing Rule 17 motion as well with regard to these documents. The Massachusetts State Police is an agent of the Commonwealth. The internal affairs investigation happened quite recently. We're asking the court to go ahead and order those documents because we are on the eve of trial. The administrative hearing that took place deals directly with allegations of misconduct by Trooper Proctor in this case. If Attorney Brennan's position is that these documents are not in the Commonwealth's possession, we're asking the court to go ahead and just order that information be produced so that we're not having to scramble on the eve of trial to obtain that information.
So if it's Rule 17 instead of Rule 14, the third party has to be served, right?
So there is an ongoing order, Your Honor, under Rule 17 as well. We already filed that, a Wienus motion back in 2022, and it was ongoing.
All right. If somebody can tell us the paper number so we can find that.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will. Commonwealth has indicated that they do not object to requests 6 and 7, so we'd ask that the court allow those requests. As to requests 8 and 9, those deal with a request for communications between the Norfolk County District Attorney's Office and its law enforcement agents on the one hand, and all experts retained by the Commonwealth in connection with this case. We find the Commonwealth's response to this request objecting to it particularly interesting. They claim the request is overbroad, that it is beyond the scope of Massachusetts Rule of Criminal Procedure 14. And the reason it's interesting that they're objecting to this request is because our discovery request is copied verbatim from Attorney Brennan's request as to the ARCA experts. Now that he's on the receiving end of that request, he's objecting to it. All we're asking for are the material and relevant communications that the Commonwealth and its agents have had with their experts in preparation for this case. Ms. Reed is entitled to that, and it's proper in terms of being able to effectively cross-examine those experts. And as to request 10, Your Honor, there's no objection. We'd ask that that be allowed.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Brennan.
It's important to represent facts accurately. And the court has ordered in the past, when representations have been made, that they be accurate. We hear an echoing of a claim of Brady, but we hear no substance behind that claim from the defense as to, number one, the Commonwealth is not going to make logs up that don't exist. They're not going to make a record of something that is not in writing, that there is no witness for. The defense has asked for chain of custody, logs, evidence, reports. If they existed, they would get them. I told the defense in an informal discovery request I would look into any chain of custody information, and I did. I've spoken to a number of witnesses, including the retired sergeant, and I expect that I will have him write a report to give to the defense, and I'll provide them all the information that I have about what I could find out about the tapes that were provided in this case, where they came from, who downloaded them, who touched them, and who they went to. But there are some things the Commonwealth cannot do. They cannot simply invent a log when a log does not exist, and they cannot invent a chain of custody that is not in writing and there is no witness to. I've done my best to be thorough and diligent, and they will receive a report and have all the information that we have. It's odd that it's important during argument to mention that there's an ongoing federal investigation and then list a number of witnesses for the Commonwealth, implying somehow something's nefarious, that these witnesses are involved in this other controversial case that has nothing to do with this case that the defense would like to parasite onto. And so they just throw out terms and words for our audience that's here on our right to try to create an illusion of impropriety. There is nothing that they have provided about the Birchmore case that will provide a basis for the Commonwealth to now go scramble and search for information that there's no good faith actually exists. It's easy to throw out a name and attach it to the Birchmore case, troopers, the DA, malign their name the way they know how to do. But when you're arguing a discovery motion, there must be a factual basis for it, a factual basis, a good faith basis. We hear the defense say that Trooper Guarino says, nothing to see here. I have not seen that report where Trooper Guarino says, nothing to see here. I don't know what report they're speaking about when they suggest Trooper Guarino had done something wrong in a different case. They imply it. They're suggesting that's the basis for you to compel discovery on a case that has nothing to do with Ms. Reed's case. They just say it. And so you should reject outright an argument that tries to imply impropriety when there is none, with no factual basis or good faith basis, because they want to entertain our audience. And so the reality is the Birchmore case is being investigated by federal authorities There's been a number of disclosures by the Commonwealth for information that has been public record. And there is no good faith basis that there is something in that case that is relevant in any way to this case. Ms. Birchmore was a victim. Number four, unredacted copy of all reports, communication, handwritten law enforcement notes, again, in the Birchmore case. Why? Why that case? Troopers work on many cases. That case certainly has a public appeal to it because of the harshness of it, the sadness of it. But what does it have to do with this case? Nothing. But invoking it is helpful for the defense. So they do. You should reject it outright, Your Honor. Number five, all communications, documents, reports, memorandum regarding Trooper Proctor administrative proceedings. Any information in the Commonwealth's possession and control, we would and we do turn over. In addition to what's in our possession and control, we know that there's likely statements that would be helpful for the defense. So we have an affirmative obligation under Graham. In fact, I had a conversation with defense counsel, and they asked if I would join them in a phone call and speak to counsel for the state police to try to encourage the production of materials in this case, whether they're exculpatory or not, even material irrelevant. And I agreed I would do that upon request. Now, that call has not been set up by the defense, but when it is, if it is, I will be there and I'll advocate for them for this information. In addition, there's a Rule 17 that has been ordered by this court that imposes an ongoing duty separately upon the state police. Now, state police have certain protection where it's an internal affair investigation by law. I cannot usurp that law. I can only earnestly try to my best of my ability. I sent an email on January 28, 2025, to a number of attorneys at the state police. And I informed counsel in view of the Commonwealth's responsibilities under Brady versus Maryland in Giglio, and most recently set out in McFarland and Graham, the Norfolk District Attorney's Office is inquiring whether the Mass State Police Legal Department and law enforcement officers assigned to the State Police General Headquarters in possession of any relevant materials, statements of Mr. Michael Proctor, witness statements, and any findings relative to the department investigation and hearings relative to this matter. The Commonwealth is under a continuing duty to inquire and obtain all relevant evidence pertaining to witnesses in the matter of Commonwealth versus Karen Reed. All potentially exculpatory and relevant evidence must be disclosed to the defense. Exculpatory evidence is any evidence that would tend to exculpate the defendant or tend to diminish credibility. Exculpatory evidence also includes any allegations of misconduct that bear upon the truthfulness and the integrity of the investigation or could be read as suggesting bias or would question one's credibility to be impartial. In addition to any obligations under Mass Rule 14, Commonwealth Alerts Internal Affairs Division of Massachusetts State Police to an ongoing Mass Rule Criminal Procedure 17 order for the production of records regarding the investigation of Trooper Michael Proctor, to the extent that any records beyond that was initially produced in March 19, 2024, please provide forthwith to the Commonwealth and the defense. So we are and have made best efforts to provide all of that material. The defense is entitled to it. We cannot force them or compel them, but there is the Rule 17 motion and we'll continue to abide by our obligation and duty. Number six and seven, we do not object. Number eight, there is a difference between ARCA, and we'll discuss that in more detail when we get to the ARCA motion, and expert discovery. We provided, there is a difference between ARCA as an expert witness and typical expert witnesses. I can assure the court that we provided our entire case file for our accident reconstruction expert. We provided all of our materials for all of our experts. The discussion between the experts, the oral discussion between the experts and me, cannot be replicated. If there was anything inconsistent or exculpatory or helpful for the defense, I would reduce it to writing and I would provide it to them. They have all the materials our experts relied upon. They have all of the reports. They have all the raw data. They have the research material. I do not believe that tracking phone calls for a regular expert is possible, number one, and has any relevance whatsoever. It is different for ARCA, and again, I'll delve into that when we talk about ARCA, because that is a very unique situation. We have been very broad in our expert disclosures. Written communications, number nine, email text message between Norfolk County DA's office, law enforcement, and any expert. Again, there's scheduling issues. I've been through emails and text messages, and I have given a healthy production of materials that are relevant, would even suggest any type of bias. And in addition, I've asked for a production of any statements whatsoever with any witnesses in this case so that I can review them. And I've received production from two troopers in this case that I have to review. I received them at the end of last week. And I'll continually look through all correspondence available to me for Rule 14 materials and provide it.
All right. Any follow-up, Ms. Little?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
All right. So I'll take that under advisement. Do you have that Rule 17 paper number?
Your Honor, we don't have the paper number yet for the motion.
Yeah, we'll have to find. I mean, we're over 500 at this point. So.
Yes.
All right. All right, so next we'll move on to the so-called ARCA motion, Commonwealth's motion to exclude employees of ARCA, paper 497, and the opposition 505. So, Mr. Brennan? Sure.
Your Honor, my purpose is not to deprive the defense of an expert or deprive the defense of an ARCA expert in this case. But there has to be a minimum requirement of reciprocal discovery and discovery before a party can call a witness. It's not enough to say that the witness is helpful or unhelpful. There has to be full disclosure when calling an expert. It's interesting that the defense's position is that the information's unavailable to them, and that since there's been a voir dire and trial testimony, that should be enough. Well, what the government worries about is that there is other things that are relevant, like compensation, promise, reward, inducement, whether there's collaboration between one side or the other, and that expert witness that they don't know about and can't ask about, that there's some type of bias or favoritism that the expert might have towards one side for whatever reason. So if that information is not disclosed, then it is not only an impediment, it creates a position where it is an unfair examination. It's not the ARCA witnesses that I have the issue with, it's the issue the fact that I don't have adequate discovery. If the defense is going to be a proponent of those witnesses, they have obligations, Rule 14 obligations, for basic discovery. Now, I wasn't at the last trial, but I've read the transcripts. And on June 10, 2024, you asked the defense about ARCA, and it was represented these experts were hired by the federal government and they provided a report to us pursuant to a TUI request. It was specifically outlined and ruled that they could not prep with us for trial. Could not prep with us for trial. And so Your Honor said, so I am to believe that the defense is calling three witnesses that you've never spoken to and putting them on the stand here. And the answer, that's essentially it. We've spoken to them only for purposes of coordinating their testimony and their background. We've not been able to interview them regarding their findings, which are outlined in detail in the reports that both sides have. Your Honor said, see, I don't see that as being the report. I don't see that as being detailed. It leaves a lot of questions as the gatekeeper as to what they can testify, and you have not complied with your Rule 14 obligations. And the defense says, we can't, Your Honor. And your Honor said, so you can't, but you haven't. So I'm left with that you have not complied.
So where in the transcript is this?
On page 28-12 and 28-13 of June 10, 2024. Now, having some familiarity with the federal government, it seemed to me, based on my limited experience, there was much more to the story. So I called the federal government and I tried to encourage them to provide full discovery so that the experts could testify. I was resigned to a TUI letter. I've been down that road many times. It's a dark road that never sees the light of day. So I filed a TUI letter, comprehensive TUI letter. And it was delayed in over a long period of time with requests and deadlines. I finally received a response that was unresponsive. And it was striking that it wasn't noted as unresponsive, just when I read the materials and Attorney McLaughlin actually identified them. They didn't respond to our request, so Attorney McLaughlin wrote back. And then we got new materials, just some. But these materials are the very reason why the defense should not be able to call witnesses without giving full discovery. Having not been at the last trial and reading the transcripts, I only have a flavor for the last trial. So there is email correspondence between the defense, not only the federal government, but the ARCA witnesses themselves. A recent request for their appearance pursuant to TUI, which I have no issue with. But if we look back earlier in the relationship, what we see back in March 22nd, 2024, is that there are conversations between the defense, Attorney Jackson, and Daniel Wolf, who's one of these ARCA witnesses. Thank you so much for taking the time to get on the phone with me this morning pursuant to our conversation. Please feel free to forward an engagement letter to this email address. I will get that countersigned and return to you forthwith, along with your retainer as required. The Commonwealth, as I understand it, was not aware of any promise, rewards, or inducements, or payment. They relied on a reciprocal discovery order of this court for that information. Response, hi, Alan. Subsequent to our conversation on Wednesday, the U.S. Attorney's Office asked we pause any further conversation until we received additional information from their office regarding how our involvement will move forward. Now, it's not the opinion that troubles me. It's the relationship, and the Commonwealth should have an even playing field. Saturday, June 22nd, Daniel Wolf writes, Alan, I spent some time this morning putting together a brief outline of my qualifications. Also attached my D&T list. I obviously won't say what the response is verbatim, but I gave you a general sense of what my response would be. Again, I thought your questioning during the voir dire was fantastic, so please feel free to make whatever changes you feel necessary. Now, this isn't information provided by the defense in reciprocal discovery. This is information provided by the federal government after numerous requests, TUI requests, and an insistent, the best I can, to get as much information as I can. We then are provided an outline of questions and answers for a direct examination. The Commonwealth did not have the luxury to privilege, did not even know that there was an outline that was being disseminated by this totally independent witness who took no side other than that of the truth. What follows from this outline is then the outline with remarks from this independent expert who knows nobody. So we see in the margins in the notes, this fair-minded objective witness says, So not being able to inspect the vehicle is something that is not uncommon in your line of work. And he writes, absolutely not. And then he comments, not sure if you want to put this somewhere in the direct examination. I have a feeling they, the Commonwealth, are going to argue I didn't personally inspect the vehicle. I had enough information from the material I reviewed, so it wasn't necessary. Need to show the jury it doesn't matter in this case.
What's the date of that?
It's not dated. The TUI request is a recent February response, but they send random documents. There's no real accounting. Now, I'm not saying that undermines the conclusions of ARCA, I'm not saying they're not qualified witnesses, but it certainly shows some bias. I've turned over a lot less in this case than this. Another comment. Would be fair to say because you had a lot of nighttime visibility work, your cases frequently involve pedestrians. Yes, unfortunately, there is a direct correlation between the time of day and pedestrian fatalities. Statistically speaking, most pedestrian fatalities occur during the evening and night hours. That would have been nice to have. So my specialty in the area of lighting and human factors results in a lot of my cases involving pedestrians. Pretty important stuff in this case. And then he comments, if you don't want me to say this, that's fine. That's fine. Shh. Don't tell them. Have you qualified as an expert in court before? Yes. I realized my testimony, I said it 20 times when you asked how many I've been qualified. I misinterpreted the question. My fault. 11 trials, 7 depositions. Not sure if you want me to clear that up. I don't know if it was ever cleared up. And then a bill from ARCA to the defense for $23,925. That's not Trimble. That's not trial by ambush. That's getting duped. So I didn't know any of this, but I've tried a few cases. I've been around the federal court a little bit. I know how it works. And sometimes parties pick sides. It creates an imbalance, an unfairness, and then it allows the ability to one side to use ghosts. They create illusions and shields and say something's there and something's happening, a federal investigation and this person, and then this happens. I don't care if the ARCA witnesses testify at trial. I don't care about their opinions, but I care that it's unfair, imbalanced, and hidden. And the Commonwealth, like the defense, is entitled to discovery. So if they can produce the discovery, I'd welcome ARCA.
All right, I'm going to take a recess before the response.
Court, all rise, please.
All right. So the Commonwealth just provided the court with information that causes me grave concern. The implications of that information may have profound effects on this defense and defense counsel. So for that reason, I'm going to suspend today so that when we meet again to address these issues, all affected will be appropriately prepared. So I'll see you a week from today at 11 o'clock in the morning. You can tell me now if that is impossible for you. And Mr. Brennan, where the federal authorities have been kind enough in the past to allow me to have copies of everything, would you be kind enough to call over there or check with whomever you were dealing with to see if I can in fact get a copy of everything that you just read?
I can, and there's a brief chronology I think Your Honor should be aware of. If I could add that right now, it would take me less than a minute. The chronology is December 4th. We sent another TUI request, 2024. January 6th, we filed our notice of intention to exclude ARCA experts. January 30th, 2025, the United States Attorney's Office sent a response to both ours and the defense requests. Without any prompting, on February 6, 2025, the defense and the prosecution received an email from the U.S. Attorney's Office saying that the contract had ended with the ARCA experts and that if either party wanted to engage, the original materials are still protected. This was a change in position about whether a party could engage. On February 11th, we filed the motion to exclude. February 13th, the defense provided us the emails that I read. February 13th, 2025, I think I said the federal government. It was the defense. February 13th, 2025, they sent us the emails and the direct examination outline. We reached out to the federal government again because I was curious about the change in position on February 6th, that the contract has ended, but that parties could contact ARCA. Obviously, the Commonwealth is in no position to contact ARCA because that would naturally preclude the defense from retaining them. So we've refrained and we will not reach out to them.
All right, so the information that was provided to you, not from the federal government, I'd like a copy of before you leave the courthouse today.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, 11 o'clock, a week from today.
Your Honor, is it possible to move it one day to the 26th instead of the 25th?
That does not work. Child. It would have to be at 9 o'clock in the morning.
We have to move.
Your Honor, if I may hand up the discovery that
thank
was provided
you.
By the time that the reference by...
Oh, great. Thank you.
Is there any way we should use this month for today?
We can do the afternoon of the 25th if the morning doesn't work.
The problem I have, Your Honor, is I've got a hearing on the 24th. I have to fly on the 24th even to be here.
So you can be on Zoom for this if you want, Mr. Jackson.
I'd rather be here, but... I have to accommodate whatever the court's calendar is. I have to accommodate the court's schedule. If we can do it live, I'd rather do it live, but I will accommodate the court's calendar.
Are all parties available at 9 on the 26th?
I'm not.
Ma'am, just a moment.
Yes. Thank you.
Your Honor, we'll accommodate the 25th, one
okay.
way or the other.
All right. So we'll see everyone.
Your Honor, I'm sorry. Just on behalf of Mr. Alessi, is there any chance the court would entertain the motion that he's doing today or no?
No.
Okay.
All right, 11 o'clock on the 25th.
Thank you.
All rise for the court, please.
That's the latest from the Karen Reed motions hearing taking place today. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage on this case.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.